The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Better late than never, I suppose, but has Joe Biden left it too late to withdraw as a Democratic nominee for the presidential election in the United States in November? So who should replace him as a Democratic nominee who has the best chance of winning? Should it be Kamala Harris, his vice president? Can she actually win? Well, we have a number of guests with us, and I'm going to start. Before we go to Cal Thomas or Larry Donnelly, or also our special guest, who I'll tell you about in a moment, Mary McKeown, US correspondent of the Business Post. Now that it's been done, now that Joe Biden is gone, are the Democrats starting to become confident about Kamala Harris?
Oh, I think that this has injected a huge shot of adrenaline into the race, and they really feel now that it's wide open. And I'm not sure, just a couple of moments ago at the White House, Kamala Harris, it was almost a made for her moment. She stepped in, because Joe Biden's still isolating in Delaware, she stepped into the White House to welcome the National Collegiate Athletic Champions, and they're on their way to the Olympics. And it was such a perfect metaphor. She looked completely at home in the White House. And she was, you know, it was the race and the support of the families and the team spirit, et cetera, et cetera. Paid a very nice tribute to Biden. This reminds me of the Kamala Harris I saw first in the Senate, when she would walk in with this really sunny energy and disposition, and she would kind of light up a room. And she really seems to have found that again. I think it's going to be very, very hard for any other of the names that we've mentioned, the Gavin Newsoms, the Gretchen Whitmers, to challenge her, because for starters, the Congressional Black Caucus is absolutely behind her. She's already got about 550 delegates pledged to her who have come out immediately. Fundraising has gone through the roof, and if she picks a strong running mate like a Mark Kelly or a Roy Cooper, then she's in with a really, really good chance. I think just the contrast in usefulness and energy, and as I said, this kind of happy warrior, which has changed, and such a contrast to what Trump is, you know, is offering. Now, she has got her weaknesses, you know, she really does, but I think overall it's looking very much like this is Kamala's nomination.
Now, we're also joined by Anthony Scaramucci, who is the co-host of the podcast The Rest is Politics US with Katty Kay each Friday. It's essential listening these days. Anthony, thank you very much for being with us. But my first question to you is, do you think, is the American electorate prepared to vote for a woman? If they are, for a coloured woman, and if they are for a liberal coloured woman, or would it prefer a convicted criminal, a sex offender, and a xenophobe as its president?
Well, I mean, listen, it's a loaded question. I don't think any of us are going to know the answer until election day, but I think she's got an even chance to win the presidency. If she is the eventual nominee, and I'll assume for this broadcast, and I'll make a guess and prediction that she will be the nominee because she's more or less locked everything up. Can she beat Donald Trump? I think it's an even money for me. I know Trump's ahead of the predictive market, 62-38, but I think that's because we haven't litigated the promise of Kamala Harris, and we haven't gone into the reproductive freedom issue for the American women. So I think it's going to be less about her identity, whether she's black or brown or Indian, or less about her sex organs, and it's going to be more about her positions. And so one of the problems that Joe Biden has had is that he's got a good record to run on, but he's been more or less cognitively incapacitated to sell that record to the American people. So she'll have the opportunity to do that as well. And, you know, so listen, I think she's got an even chance. It's going to be a close election. My money's on her. I'll say to your broadcast listeners that I think she wins this primarily because once we start to really dig into what Trump did over his 4 years, I don't think the American people want to go back to that. And I think they'd be willing to take a chance on her. And I'll just make my last point briefly. This beautiful country that I live in, this beautiful, colorful mosaic of a country, the demography has changed once again. It's more beautiful and it's more colorful than it was in 2020 or 2016. And that bodes well for her and not so much for Mr. Trump.
Cal Thomas, I'm going to put the same question to you as I put to Anthony there. Do you think, is the American electorate prepared to vote into office a woman, a colored woman, a liberal colored woman, or will they prefer the criminal, the sex offender, the xenophobe as his president.
Matt, you sound like you're stuck in the 1950s. Nobody says colored anymore. Nobody says Negro anymore. My goodness, you got to move up to the 21st century. Look, the only thing that matters is not gender and it isn't color, it's ideology. And if you look at the polls that have been taken in the swing states before Biden's decision not to run again, in every one of those swing states and every one of those polls, Harris is losing to Trump in a fictional matchup, except that it's no longer fictional. In some of these polls, Trump leads by 10 points. But I think the outrageous thing about all of this, and I'm writing about it in my column tomorrow, is that we were told over and over and over again by leading Democrats that Biden was completely different in private than public. Yes, he stumbled and he mumbled and he didn't know which way to go off the stage when he finished his speech, but in private, he was articulate. He was engaged. He was up to speed on all of the issues. This is what everybody, including Kamala Harris, said. They lied to us. They lied. And I don't think things are going to get better for Kamala Harris, and it has nothing to do with her race or gender. If race was an issue, then the left would be praising the people like Clarence Thomas and other conservative black people. It's not about race. It's about ideology.
That issue that you raised about whether she was covering for Biden, do you think will the electorate really care come November about that?
Well, I think, I think they realize that they've been lied to. And if they've been lied to about that, they've been lied to about other issues. Anthony mentioned the issues on Biden's side. What issues are those? Biden says the inflation was 9% when he came into office. No, it wasn't. It was 1.4%. Mortgages were far lower and more affordable, especially for young people. Gas prices were considerably down. Grocery prices were down. The border was, while not secure, it was in a lot better shape than it is now under Biden and Harris. I mean, there's quite a record to defend, but it's not a good record in my judgment.
Okay, so Larry Donnelly, despite the belief that it's a lot about the culture wars and immigration and issues like that, will the election come down to whether people feel they will be better off under a Trump presidency than they would be under a Harris one?
Yes, I think American elections invariably do come down to that. And I think, you know, for the reasons Cal has suggested, inflation is a huge issue in the United States. We always think that people look at elections, you know, with a partisan ideological head on them. A lot of them simply look at it and say, well, it was easier to fill up my car with gas when Donald Trump was president than it was when Joe Biden was president. And Harris is tieable to all of that stuff because she's part of this administration. Moreover, we haven't really got into immigration. Immigration is an absolutely huge issue. Harris was deputized effectively to sort out the southern border. It was a thankless task and she failed. Anybody would have failed. So while she injects energy into this race, and I think that, you know, look, she's infinitely better as a candidate. It's infinitely better for the Democrats that she is likely to be the nominee than Joe Biden. She has problems out the gate. And the second thing that we haven't talked about is, yes, she has lots of good qualities. Yes, she's a capable person. But let's look at the time she ran for president. And that was just trying to appeal to Democratic leftist voters. She flopped. There is no real material evidence here that all of a sudden she is going to appeal to the voters she needs to win in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, etc.
But Mary McKeown, does that matter in the sense that she won't be necessarily running on her own merits, but that she will be running as the person to stop Trump regaining office?
Yeah, two things there. Just to address what Larry said, which I think is really interesting. I went to Kamala Harris's launch of her campaign when she was running as a primary candidate back in, I think it was it January 2019 or 20, and she had a bigger crowd at that than Barack Obama had at his final event in Chicago, which I attended, when he was the nominee. The whole of Oakland was just shut down in California, but then she just plummeted. She didn't seem to have a clear message, and the fizz just went out of what started, like, you know, at such a clip. But this is different now, because back then Roe v. Wade hadn't been overturned. Back then Donald Trump hadn't incited, hadn't sicked a mob on the Capitol on January 6th. Kamala Harris is a prosecutor. Donald Trump is a convicted criminal. Kamala Harris is a young very sunny dispositioned woman who I think will engage people. And also there is a huge, black women in America are so good at the get out the vote, they're so engaged, but all women in America are so engaged at the moment because of what's happened in the last couple of years. And that's all happened since her campaign flopped. Now she has things to run on. I saw her in Las Vegas a couple of weeks ago, and she was so much better and so much more engaged than she was during her pretty awful primary, let's face it. So I think now she's got the goods that she didn't have then. And I think really what people don't want, I think a lot of Americans, there are never Trumpers, there are moderates who would take her over him because they want another 4 years of chaos, the kind of ugliness that we've seen. The border is absolutely a liability. Immigration is absolutely a liability. So I think this is going to be a brutal fight. I think it's going to be hard fought. I wouldn't put money either. I do slightly prefer her chances at this point.
Anthony Scaramucci, you worked on the 2016 campaign with Trump. You know the way his mind works. How do you think he will target Kamala Harris?
I think he has to be careful because he's up against it on women's reproductive freedom. And I think he knows that he needs suburban women to win the election. And whether you like Kamala Harris or you don't like her, or you like Donald Trump or don't like him, it's going to be a very, very close election. So if he goes hog wild on her and starts viciously attacking her the way he did Hillary Clinton, again, it's a different era in America. It's 8 years later. And I think those vicious attacks may land and help him with his base, but may ruin him with independents. So the good news for Donald Trump is he's got Susie Wiles working for him. She's a very talented person and has kept Trump on message and kept Trump disciplined. So I would imagine he's going to go after Kamala Harris, but not in the same way that he went after Hillary Clinton.
Was there an element, though, of hubris, even in the Republican convention last week, and the behavior was that almost as if they believed they had already won?
Well, that's indicative in the pick of J.D. Vance. And I think also J.D. Vance was not well vetted. I think people are going to find out that he is more closely tied to the radical right than people originally assumed. And I think that's going to present the liability for Mr. Trump. Moreover, I know Trump's personality very well. He was not in love with that vice presidential acceptance speech. It sounded like a little grandstanding to Mr. Trump and sounded a little presidential. Mr. Trump likes backseat people in roles like that. J.D. Vance is not one to take a backseat, so there's going to be trouble there. I predict that that will be a rough and sore spot during the campaign and a wild card going into November, that they end up really disliking each other before the election.
And then, just with you, Anthony, before I move back to the others, who should the Democrats pick to be the vice presidential running mate? Could it be more important in these circumstances than it usually would be?
Maybe, but I think the top of the ticket is really what matters in the U.S. But my guess is she's going to go with Governor Roy Cooper from North Carolina. She's personal friends with him. And I think he fits the moderate centrism that she's going to be shooting for as she tries to appeal to these independents.
What do you think, Larry Donnelly, about the choice of vice presidential nominee and how important could it be for her?
I think it's hugely important, and I think she has to be ruthlessly transactional in her selection. I get the point that Anthony makes about Roy Cooper, but I think electorally, from the Democrats' point of view, they cannot win the presidency unless they win the state of Pennsylvania, based on the Electoral College and based on my run of the numbers. In that vein, Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania, who's very popular there, he is the best possible choice she could make politically. He certainly doesn't guarantee that she will win Pennsylvania, a state that I think she will be struggling in anyway to win because for a whole lot of reasons. But picking him, I think, is a step in the right direction. I think she has to go that way, despite the fact that she is close to Cooper. Shapiro, I think, is the best choice she can make, politically speaking.
Carl Thomas, the money apparently seems to be rolling in now for Kamala Harris, and that money will be applied to a major advertising campaigns. How dirty do you think is this likely to get, when and how targeted would it be, irrespective of all the talk last week of dialing down the rhetoric after the attempted assassination of Donald Trump?
Yeah, that didn't last long, did it? You asked a minute ago, Matt, how Trump might campaign on this. I think one of the ads they've already got up running in some of the battleground states has some of Kamala Harris's misspokenness. For example, here's one. It's time for us to be doing what we have been doing, and that time is every day. Or, the governor and I, we were all doing a tour of the library here and talking about the significance of the passage of time, right? The significance of the passage of time. So when you think about it, there is great significance to the passage of time in terms of what we need to do to lay these wires, what we need to do to create these jobs. And there is such great significance to the passage of time when we think about a day in the life of our children. Anybody want to translate that for me? So I think you're going to see a lot of those clips in the campaign ad. I noticed that in the college athletes event at the White House this morning that Marion mentioned a moment ago, that the teleprompters were there, and she read completely from the teleprompters with no ad-libbing at all. I think you're going to see all of her appearance if between now and the certainly the convention, and if she wins the nomination until the election, completely scripted with no opportunity to go off script.
Yeah, but Cal, if you're complaining about her word salads, what about Donald Trump's? I mean, a lot of the time, it's very hard to decipher what he actually means if he's not talking about fictional characters like Hannibal Lecter and the like.
Well, you're right. I think the first 30 minutes of his acceptance speech at the Republican National Convention last week was quite good, but then he went on for another hour, incoherent in some areas. Look, we've said before, and I think we've all agreed, and even Marion agreed, that we're not exactly thrilled by the choices, and the voters certainly aren't, in this election cycle, but we have what we have. And the cliche is we have to pick the lesser of the two evils, or perhaps in this campaign, the evil of two lessers.
Okay, Anthony Scaramucci, I've heard you talk on The Rest is Politics US about your own personal connection to Kamala Harris and your belief that she may be a different person to the perception that the public has of her. Tell us a little bit about that.
No, I think that she has been hamstrung in that role. Everybody on this call with you knows that the vice presidency is a role of, let's say, exclusion as opposed to inclusion in an administration. And I think vice presidents suffer from that. Certainly Richard Nixon did. And I think she's way more talented than she's come across in the last 3.5 years. And so this is her breakout moment, and she's tough and formidable. You don't get to where she is in that world of politics without being tough and formidable. And she has reasonably good staff around her to act like a chief operating officer on the campaign. And my last point is that politicians benefit from low expectations. People that have high expectations typically get creamed. And right now the expectations for her are very low. And America likes an underdog. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
Marion McCone, we'll talk about Joe Biden's legacy during our usual Tuesday night slot tomorrow. But is he guilty of undermining her by keeping her so much in the background in recent years, not allowing her to build her profile, perhaps because he didn't want to do so, because he didn't want people to be talking at an earlier stage about replacing him for the presidency?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, Joe Biden's like all politicians. He has an ego. He's going to put himself first. But I think, just as Anthony said, that, you know, it's a thankless job. And I can't remember which vice president described it as being akin to a warm bucket of pee, and I'm paraphrasing there. But, you know, it's generally regarded as a thankless task, being a vice president. And, you know, you bide your time and maybe you get a shot. More often you don't, you know. So she and the immigration and handing her that was setting her up to fail, because nobody, you cannot fix that. And I think trying to go to where she went, to South America and or to Central America, and trying to address the problem there was smart, but it was never going to work. So she has that liability. But I think, as I say, she has come into her own with the Roe v. Wade thing. This is the best time, I think, to have a woman candidate, because women's rights are being so eroded, and there's a feeling generally of rights being taken away. And I think that she will, and she has that prosecutor's logic and that prosecutor's way to formulate an argument, and she has been making a coherent stand against that. It is an important issue, but as I said, she's also a happy warrior. She's got a big smile, and this has been such a cranky, ill-tempered election between two old men who are just really just it's disillusioning for the public, and I think that they will welcome somebody younger, whether it's her. Now, she hasn't got the nomination yet. The word seems to be she'll have it by Wednesday, but, you know, that they do, that you want somebody younger with a more sunny, with a more optimistic, a more energetic outlook. So we'll see where it goes.
Larry Donnelly, though, are we making a mistake in this conversation as taking it for granted that she will get the Democratic nomination?
Maybe 2 or 3 days ago, I would have said so. But the way that, particularly powerful forces in the Democratic Party have coalesced around her, including a number of the people mentioned as potential replacements for Joe Biden, I don't really see anything other at this point than her being the nominee. I think that for a whole host of reasons, she's the most expedient choice. I don't necessarily believe that she's the most electable choice of all those on offer. Again, I believe Gretchen Whitmer fits that bill best. But I think in all likelihood, she is going to be the nominee. The one thing I'd say, and Anthony and Marion have mentioned it repeatedly, and there's no doubt that Kamala Harris, for all sorts of good reasons, is going to make serious hay out of the abortion issue in the wake of the reversal of Roe versus Wade. And that excites progressives, and of course that excites women. But I would say the first thing to watch is, can she change the dial in Arizona and Georgia, two states that right now are regarded as out of reach? They were out of reach for Biden, and that's part of the reason why he's gone. If she can change the dial there on abortion, then that works. If she can't, however, and this race comes down to Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, I would caution that the abortion issue will only take her so far. People don't say this, and you know, people say all women are galvanized by this. One-third of American women identify as pro-life, and that is particularly the case in middle America, in places like Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. So I would say that abortion can galvanize progressives and women, but Democrats are not going to win this election on the issue of abortion.
Larry Donnelly, political columnist with thejournal.ie, thank you. And Cal Thomas, nationally syndicated US columnist. Marion McKeown, the US correspondent of the Business Post. And both Marion and Cal will be back with us tomorrow night. And also Anthony Scaramucci from The Rest Is Politics US.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.